Desafinado, signature tune for Literary Discord, the WPKN program about books and book publishing. I'm Hans Koning, and the producer is Scott Harris. Our guests are usually people who have been in publishing in a long time, in one function or another. Tonight's guest has a record so far. He has been writing for Publishers Weekly since the year 1946. His name is Paul Nathan, and here he is. I know you are... Well, they call me a veteran novelist. You're really a veteran book publishing person. What year did you start out writing about publishing, about books?
1946.
I see.
I started writing a column for Publishers Weekly. And I was never a member of the staff. I was also always a contributing editor.
But this went on for half a century.
Yeah, 51 years, actually.
And now you write for the London PW,
yes,
right?
I'm writing for Publishing News in London.
I see. Is that
reporting on what's going on in this country, mostly,
right,
that it would be of interest to the Brits and to people in foreign countries and also here in the States, because that publication is read over quite a wide area.
What is it called?
It's called New York Notes by Paul Nathan.
And what's the magazine called?
What did you say?
What is the name of the magazine?
Publishing News.
Oh, of course. And it's a weekly?
It's a weekly, but I'm a monthly.
Right.
Although I cover some special stories as they come along, such as the recent upset at Random House.
I see.
When Peter Olson, who represents the CEO of the Random House Group, which is now owned by Bertelsmann in Germany, fired Ann Godoff, who had been the head of the Random House division. And this is very interesting because he had been praising her just a short time before, saying she was meeting her goals, contributing a great deal to the company. And then suddenly she was not meeting the financial goals. This whole thing of meeting goals is a modern development.
Right.
It used to be that publishers published what they were interested in, what they thought liked, and thought would not lose them too much money, and maybe they could help build a career by doing several books by a promising author. And nowadays, there's no room for that, or very little room for it. So,
well, it is a very severe impoverishment now of the literary scene.
Yes.
How do you see this being carried on? What's going to happen? Are we going to read only bestsellers from now on? I mean,
Bestsellers are going to be the required reading, the reading that pushes aside other readings, except for people who have special interests and follow them up as books on those interests come out. But the tendency now is not to dare to publish anything that's likely to lose money, because the editors are under close scrutiny by the bosses of the companies, and the companies have merged and been bought by foreign ownership. It's very disconcerting nowadays if you are calling on the phone to Doubleday, which is a venerable name in American publishing,
yes,
and the person answering the phone, if there is a person, says Random House, because Doubleday is now owned by Random House.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yes, which is owned by Bertelsmann.
Oh, for God's sake.
Second largest publishing company, I think, in the world.
Yeah. Imagine in 1946 they had said, you'll see how the Germans take over half of our publishing. People would have thought you were stark staring mad. Oh, God.
In 1946, selling foreign rights, which is now a very big element in publishing, was considered a minor concern and was entrusted very often to the president of the company's secretary. And they did a good job.
Yeah.
And as a perhaps as an outcome of the fact that these rights were handled by secretaries. Many of the stars in selling foreign rights are women, have been and are, and they do a damn good job.
Right. And there were also a lot of freelance women editors in Westchester and all over the place to whom the manuscripts were sent for grammar and syntax.
Well, freelance editing came into the picture when people started getting fired or couldn't meet the stringent requirements of the new owners of trade publishing companies. Some of them quit, some of them were fired, and many of them set up as freelance editors, and some of them are very skillful. And there are a number of men doing that job, too. The women have gone on into other parts of publishing and have become the heads of companies.
Yes.
One of the interesting and disturbing things in connection with, I think I just mentioned Ann Godoff in Random House, the year before last, she published 103 novels that were by new authors, which I think is quite remarkable.
Yes.
Not all of them made an impression, but they were probably all worth publishing. And this was considered, not valuable enough to the company, so she was fired because her projections or their projections of how much should be earned by her division were not fulfilled. Although, a little earlier, Peter Olson, who fired her, said that she had been meeting the goals. So it's quite confusing. But apparently there was pressure on him from Germany, and he has to do what they tell him to do.
One got the impression from the articles, they said she was too, quote, literate or too literary for the taste of the owners.
Yes, that was part of the charge against her.
Not that in my books it wouldn't be a charge. It would be very nice, of course, if somebody was very literate.
Yes.
But was there that element in it, too, you think?
There was something of that. But part of the thing was that she didn't have a paperback line. And paperback lines can make a lot of money because the books are cheaper. More people are inclined to spend their money on them. And what she had was... She did start a paperback line, but it never got off the ground. And what happened was that another part of the Random House complex did start and did have a paperback line. And they bought the paperback rights to a number of the books that Anne had published in hardcover. And so she was robbed of this supplementary source of income.
I see.
She was just about to start out having her own line, but didn't get the chance to get it off the ground.
Now, can you switch back to 1946 or 1947?
Yeah.
Was there a gradual degradation sort of from the beginning, or what is it completely different? What are the episodes in your career in which it was this way or that way, starting from 46 on?
I would say that it wasn't a gradual decline, but big publishers got the idea that it would be profitable to absorb small publishers, and some of the purchases of the other publishing houses here were European, and it meant that the editors couldn't be so free to pick what they wanted to publish. They had to try to meet the standards that were imposed upon them. And also, something happened gradually, which was that the marketing directors of publishing companies got more and more of a voice in what was going to be published. They would say, well, I don't know how to sell that. And it isn't like anything else.
Oh, God.
And the woman of one of the major publishing companies was presented at an editorial meeting with a strong recommendation to buy a certain book, and she said, but it isn't like anything. So that meant that book couldn't be published. Now the editors or the publicists or the top people describe a new book they're enthusiastic about, like it's a cross between something and something else. They have to make it look like a brand name book.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like John Grisham and such a book, crossed with Danielle Steele or who knows who.
Yeah, I know they love to give the impression that it's just like so-and-so plus
yes.
so-and-so. It is very depressing.
So publishing has become, in a way, very much like show business in Hollywood.
Yeah, but in general, you would think they would be happy with something which hasn't been, which is like nothing seen before.
Well, if it's striking in some way, they may do that. Like with the Corrections.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which was a book quite written by a very young writer and quite different from anything else. And
did you read it?
Yes, I did, and I was impressed by it.
Oh.
This was chosen by Oprah Winfrey's book club, and it would entail an appearance by the author on her program. Unfortunately, the author felt he had written something that was too literary for the television audience and declined the invitation to appear on her program. She did go on to recommend the book, but she didn't have him on the program, and she began to rethink her commitment to promoting books on her show and discontinued her book club. I believe she's still promoting certain books occasionally, but there's no regularity about it.
Well,
and a number of other book clubs, so-called, have come into existence to fill the gap. And newspapers like U.S. Today and morning programs on television, and they've all made way for some selections of books to tout. So to some extent, it's been an interesting development.
I hate that when they say the 10 best or the 100 best, the word best has no meaning in that context.
That's
for me.
Right.
It's horrible. But I tried to read the Corrections. Well, I read the beginning. I must say I got stuck in it. But I was very impressed. I'm very impressed with somebody refusing to be on that thing, because that was also, I mean, all these things work all in one direction, no? The big, the brand name recognition, but I think it's all very uncomfortable.
It's interesting that just lately some of the brand names have not been doing so well.
Yes, I saw that.
Danielle Steele, John Grisham, Mary Higgins Clark, all very worthy writers.
Yes, well,
I think they have lost some of their pull, and maybe because we're in economic hard times.
You are very generous. I wouldn't call them worthy. I mean, I know they're great professionals in what they're doing. They don't need my approval, but it's hardly worthy literature, no?
Yeah.
It's a bit gimmicky and not very. I know Barnes & Noble in Westport, near where I live, they had a pile of Gresham up to the, like, 6 feet high, and it's not visibly diminished. So there was a certain schadenfreude in it, if I may use for once a German word. Because, if you think of the millions of copies they sell and with advances for which 100 serious novels could be published, that's all rather hair-raising. Publishers Weekly itself, now that you have left them behind, you are free to give your real opinion, or don't you feel like doing that?
On what?
Well, for instance, I had a feeling, I think I greatly respect them, and I've been treated very nicely myself by them as a writer, but they have this star or whatever. Some reviews get a star, right? Is that the word? I don't know, a star, an asterisk, some kind of...
Say some reviewers have a style?
No. Some of the reviews in PW have a star.
A star. A starred and, review.
And that plays a big role in the ads later. But as far as I can tell, it just means that there's a promise from the publisher to spend a lot of money on the promotion. Isn't that so?
If it is, I don't know that.
Oh, no, well, if you don't know it, it's not true, obviously.
I would
obviously.
Think not, because I think one of the things PW has to sell is its objectivity.
Of course.
Although they may get enthusiastic about something.
No, I didn't mean that there's something...
I don't think it
Oh, no, I certainly didn't mean there was something improper about it. It just meant that the very books which had a lot of weight behind them, push from the publisher,
Yes, the push from the publisher might help.
Yeah.
I mean, that would mean that PW would thereby give it a starred review, but it would attract PW's serious attention to something.
Right. I'm Hans Koning in Literary Discord. I'm talking to Paul Nathan, who has written for Publishers Weekly from 1946 till a year ago.
I think it was about 3 years.
3 years ago.
Whatever would come out, 51 years.
But he certainly makes him a record holder in this field, and he now writes for a British publication.
PW redesigned itself.
I see.
And I think also as a way of saving some money.
You don't have a direct successor at PW?
Well, John Baker, who was editor-in-chief, is now something like managing editor. I don't think that's quite it, but anyway,
I see.
Now taking on the chore of reporting subsidiary rights.
You focused on rights, right?
Yes.
And so there's nobody doing that now?
Well, yes.
Oh, Baker does
John,
that
John
as,
is doing
as part
it.
Of his job?
And I don't envy him another part of his job, which is that he's in charge of a daily report, which is available by email. And I should think he would be overwhelmingly busy, which is too bad.
Oh, God, he has to write a daily report?
Well, maybe he has somebody who works with him.
How many words?
I don't know.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
I have emailed, but I haven't subscribed.
Oh, well, say half a page?
I suppose so.
But you mean that every day there is a worthwhile development in publishing?
Well, there are a lot of contracts signed.
Oh, I see.
And a lot of things being offered to publishers.
Right. Now, listen, you are now also at the other side of the fence, right? You have written a novel.
Well, yes.
I know you have written some whodunits, but now
I have three mystery novels published.
Yeah, no, I know that.
And
they're lovely.
Before that,
I wrote
a book called Texas Collect.
Texas Collect?
Things people in Texas do collect, some of which are quite surprising.
And is it making the rounds?
Which one? Or
your new novel? Or is it the novel?
Oh, well, I do have a new novel, yes.
Oh, that's not Texas Collect?
No.
What is the new novel?
The new novel is called Somehow. And it's been seen by several publishers, one of whom turned it down with the sentence that I have come to realize is standard in publishing, which is I just didn't love it enough.
I see. Oh.
Which I think is an amusing way of turning something down. And then a couple of them said it wasn't for their list, but they were sure it would find a publisher.
Oh, God.
So I may give it another go over to see if I can strengthen it, if that's what it needs.
I know Ruth, your wife, is a literary agent.
Yes, she's an agent.
Is she your agent?
Yes, she is.
I see.
And we've somehow managed to be polite to each other.
But this is some sort of divine justice in you getting these letters that they don't love it enough. Because I know them only too well as a writer.
Uh-huh.
Or they say they don't know, as you said before, we don't know how to sell it.
Yeah, that's another thing.
It would be much nicer if they say, I don't like it, write something else. Or perhaps it's above my head, they should say, if they were honest. That would be
there was someone, now that I think of it, who did want to buy it. And his publishing company, not really a company, was an imprint more than anything, and very selective. And the headquarters of the overall umbrella company were in Washington, and he sent the manuscript to them, and they didn't publish much fiction to begin with. They turned it down, but he really wanted to buy it. So I felt somewhat
vindicated,
yeah.
I see. Did it go to the big houses, or don't you want to talk about it? Is that a secret?
Well, it's a literary novel, so it didn't go to the trade houses that we've been talking about.
But you must have hundreds of old buddies in all these places, no? Or buddies is perhaps not the word.
Well, actually, what happens is that a lot of the people with whom I was quite close have become freelance editors, as we were discussing, or have many of them have become agents. And some of them have got out of the book business entirely. There was an interesting article in New York Magazine quite recently by, I think, Michael Wolff, who had been an editor in a publishing house.
Oh, yes.
He was saying publishing is something that no smart young person is going to go into anymore.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Wolff.
There may be a lure that will still attract people, but he has the point. The prospects are not awfully good.
Well, between in paintings, Vincent van Gogh sold one painting in his whole life, but we have to live with that.
Yeah.
I know Wolff, and I don't. I think he has the wrong approach. If that doesn't sound
well, it was pretty derogatory. Yeah. To the whole business.
No, he wrote a piece about the New York Times Book Review, and he was indignant that McGrath didn't look into the fate of the books. That were reviewed, that he didn't make, see if they were bestsellers or not. He said they don't use their bestseller list for commercial promotions.
Uh-huh.
And that all seemed very, thank heaven that we haven't gotten that far yet. But anyway, that was what I know about Wolff.
I think one of the interesting developments recently has been the emergence of graphic novels, or not necessarily novels. These are like, you know, Ace Comics or something, except that they've attained a level of respectability and literary skill that most of what they deal with is told in terms of pictures rather than text. But some of them are very interesting from what I hear.
Wow, I've never seen that.
There's one...
For adults,
Larry
you mean?
Connick, who has been doing a history of civilization as comic book type things. And his editor was Jacqueline Onassis, which...
At Simon & Schuster?
No, she was at Doubleday.
I see. Oh.
I don't know who's editing him now.
And this is becoming a strong thing now?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Proust is being done in comic book form. It's not proper to call them comic books. They aren't comic. But in graphic novels, novel forms.
So these are pictures with short captions?
Yes.
And that goes, the whole book is presented that way?
Yes. It went with great artistry. I have a couple of them that were done in French.
You don't sound indignant.
No, I think they're an interesting development. And have some artistic merit.
Well, yeah, but it's not Proust. It's magnificent, but not Proust, to quote.
But I think they're on volume 2 of Proust.
I think it's not. Remember that movie Fahrenheit 343 or whatever, in which everything was just pictures.
Oh, the books were burned.
Yeah, there were no more text. I mean, we really seem to go in that direction at great speed. Then.
Well. Book burning is a serious issue right now.
Yeah.
But toward the end of 2001, the members of a fundamentalist church in Alamogordo, New Mexico, had a big bonfire, and they burned the Harry Potter books and all the works of Shakespeare.
Oh, well.
How about that?
They chose their victims carefully. Oh, but did they explain themselves to the world, or try to, rather?
Did they do what?
Did they try to explain themselves to the public that they burned Shakespeare?
I don't know.
They thought Shakespeare was...
Maybe the congregation understood already. I don't know whether they explained it to the public or not.
For a moment, to leave aside books, but to talk about life in general,
yes.
Do you sometimes have the feeling that the U.S. is sort of slowly descending into a second Middle Ages?
Yes.
Oh.
I'm not sure the Middle Ages were that unpleasant.
I see. So
but now we have something called the USA Patriot Act, which has made attempts to find out from bookstores and libraries, and to some extent succeeded, I think, what people are reading and what kind of book they're buying or what they're taking out of the library. To try to trap spies and terrorists.
Right.
And there was a case in Colorado, Denver, Tattered Bookshop, The Tattered Cover, the name of that bookstore.
Yes.
They were approached by the FBI and asked for this information, and they refused to give it. And the Colorado State Supreme Court sided with the bookshop, thank goodness.
I see.
But there are things like this going on all over the country, apparently.
Oh, heavens. Do you know recent examples that a book of great merit was refused because it had the wrong politics? I'm trying to think.
There's an example of, I think she's a French young woman who has written a book from the viewpoint of a Palestinian girl.
Oh, yes.
And it's been a big seller in France. But I don't know. I think someone has taken it on here. Someone who's defying the authorities and the general opinion.
I know. I don't want to be self-centered, but I know from my own life that books of mine have been refused because I was too left, or they thought I was too left-wing, especially during the Vietnam War years.
I can understand that.
And we have sort of a déjà vu feeling now. It's starting all over.
By the
again.
Way, can you tell at this point how your new publishing arrangement is to get all your books in print?
Well, they're sticking with it, and they're doing it. They don't have much money to promote it, and have a feeling that book publishing is now, it's almost on the level now as bringing out a movie. You need full page ads. It's rather tricky to. Certainly not. You just can't just print them and hope for the best. You have to have vast amounts of money is going to be spent in it. I don't think I've ever seen a full page ad for a book before the most recent month. Have you?
No.
This is all very depressing. Well, anyway, can you think of something up cheering up to close this program? Can you think of something nice? The good news is.
Good news is there are a number of talented young writers coming along, one of whom wrote The Corrections, and one of whom wrote, I think, something about Everything is Illuminated, which I haven't read.
I see.
And there's some young man who's in his early 20s or maybe in his teens who is working on a series of fantasy novels. And he published the first novel himself, which attracted enough attention so that Klopp has given him a book for a contract for 3 books.
Oh, I see.
And
I want to. I'm sorry, I didn't want to sound too negative. No, indeed, I should be happy because all my novels are being republished, as you know. And in fact, he told me that other writers, probably better known than I, wrote to them and said, "Can you do the same for us?" So. The world turned upside down. Paul, thank you very much.
It's been a
pleasure. And I hope you'll be back in the future at some point.
Thank you.
And God bless.
You too. Bye.
You have listened to Literary Discord, which is WPKN program about books and book publishing, and we try to focus very much on literary values. Our guest today was Paul Nathan, who is a real veteran who has been writing in Publishers Weekly since 1946. You can hear this program again on the second Tuesday of the next month, that is the 11th of March, at which time it will be broadcast at 12 o'clock noon. These times are for the listeners in southern New England. Other stations which now carry this program have their own times, and you have to find out directly when they are. I'm Hans Koning, the producer is Scott Harris, and we thank you for listening.